It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, PacView's Melissa Burdick, special guest Jackie Donowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of May 13th, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them polyhistorically intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Jackie, kick us off, would you?
Disney Advertising and Walmart Connect to bring closed-loop attribution to streaming advertisers. Well, hello there, Fresh Four listeners. Disney Advertising and Walmart Connect have solidified an agreement to bring the retailer's industry-leading audience solutions and measurement to Disney's addressable streaming inventory. The collaboration will enable enhanced audience targeting and outcome-based measurements for brand campaigns across Disney's streaming portfolio, including Hulu and Disney+, connecting Walmart's customer insights with Disney's proprietary audience graph will help advertisers reach their desired audiences and measure the impact of their campaigns through closed-loop attribution.
Thanks, Jackie. Andrea, over to you.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. NBC Universal and Instacart link up to bring retail media opportunities to TV. NBC Universal and Instacart are expanding their existing partnership to include a new retail media workstream that will enable Instacart's CPG advertisers to connect with consumers via NBC Universal's streaming and linear television content. In late 2023, the companies teamed up to include access to NBC Universal's streaming platform Peacock as part of the Instacart Plus membership package. Now, with this new first-party data collaboration, advertisers will be able to reach consumers through NBC Universal's content and measure the impact of their campaigns by leveraging ad exposure and purchase data from Instacart.
Thank you, Andrea. Melissa, what do you have for us?
Amazon has announced a new country that they're opening up. Amazon has announced that it will launch a new dedicated website for Ireland in 2025. Currently, most Irish customers use Amazon sites based in the UK or other European countries. The company said the Irish site will mean that users will be able to avoid additional customs charges and currency conversion fees, and it will also lead to faster delivery and returns for many items. All right, over to you, Peter.
Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Sri Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bond, and Brian Gildenberg, explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, here are the CPG Guys. Hello and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm PVSB, and when I'm not co-hosting this podcast along with my partners, I serve as partnership acceleration lead at Flywheel Digital, the leading managed services business that helps brands grow their e-commerce. Along today for our conversation is my fellow co-founder of the CPG Guys. Please listen to his daughter Ria Raj's music at riaraj.com. There's a hyperlink in the digital liner notes of this episode. And now follow his other daughter, Lara Raj, as she competes to be one of the final members of the global K-pop band in the new series Dream Academy. He joins us today from his home base in Southern California. As we record this, we're going into the Labor Day weekend. Please let me welcome my podcasting counterpart. He's the man known as Sri. Sri, how you doing? Proud papa, man. A lot of stuff going on with the Raj girls.
Big week for us in the family, as you just pointed out, right? I mean, I never fathomed in my life when I came to the U.S. that I'd actually have daughters who would actually be artists and be public figures, and now second one is not even an adult yet, and simple Google search will reveal about 1,000 articles about her. Billboard magazine, People magazine, Elle magazine, Vogue, that list goes on and on and on. So yeah, I'm grateful for it. And of course, Peter, pleasure to do this with you week over week.
And Sri, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that your wife Kavita's got her own podcast, Lights, Camera, Conversation. So pretty quickly, you're like the fourth most famous member of your family. Like, what is going on there?
I wonder where the inspiration for a podcast came from.
I just want to know when your cats are going to get a podcast so you can move down to number six. It's getting a little crazy.
They have an Instagram page, so that a good start?
I think that pretty much is, Sri. Anyhow, thank you for joining me today. Looking forward to the conversation we've got going. Before we get to a guest, I'll remind everyone to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform, Apple, Spotify, Overcast, iHeartRadio. There are like 40 of them. But if you're on particularly Apple and Spotify while you're there, you like what we're doing, please give us a rating, right? The rating helps feed the algorithm and it makes our podcast more findable, but also leave a review there because we want your feedback. We want this podcast to be talking about topics that are of the most interest to our followers. We really want to express how honored we are to be rated the number one CPG podcast for 2 years running, according at least to FeedSpot, the leading podcast ranking authority. And we're so happy to have our three sister podcasts, right? CPG Scoop, CPG Fast Forward with Brian Gildenberg and the FMCG guys are all part of the top 30. I mean, it's crazy. And I just found out we are in the top 50 marketing podcasts in the U.S. according to Chartable. That is just incredible. Top 50. I can't believe that. Of course, we are very happy to be formal sponsors of Next Up, formerly known as Network of Executive Women. And their mission is to advance all women in business and promote the cause of gender equality. Sri recently appeared on stage at the Next Up Forum in Austin, Texas, and he's going to be at the Next Up Summit in Chicago in September. So that should be great. Link to our podcast, our sister cast, our page on Next Up. You just go over to Rhea's music page, even Kavita's podcast page. You can find it at the digital liner notes of this episode. Just toggle over there. 90%+ of you are listening on your mobile device. No need to write anything down. Nobody carries a pen anymore. Just toggle over, click the hyperlink. You're off to go. All right. So let's get to our guest for this episode. I met him earlier this year at the Shop Talk Europe event in Barcelona, Spain, where he actually resides. He started his career as an engineer. Do you believe this, Sri? In the steel industry. After 5 years, he moved into the world of fast-moving consumer goods by joining PepsiCo. Sri, do you and I know anything about PepsiCo? I vaguely remember us. Might have spent a little time there. He spent 8 years actually in retail customer facing roles before joining Amazon as a buyer in the beauty category, beverages to beauty. At least he stayed with the same letter. In 2018, he joined the Purina pet care division of Nestle as e-commerce director for the UK and then EMENA. In 2021, he was promoted to his current role where he sits as the global head of e-commerce for Nestle. He's here today to speak with us about his thoughts on this transformational omnichannel world we find ourselves in today. Please join me in welcoming to the podcast, Neil Arora. Hey, Neil, how you doing? Welcome.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show and nice to catch up after Shop Talk.
Absolutely. Listen, we really appreciate you taking time to speak with us today. I should also mention that prior to you and I meeting in person, your colleague Viral Shah, a previous podcast guest and the chief e-commerce and digital officer at Nestle, introduced us via email, and he suggested you should come on the podcast. But he had a condition, Neil. What was that condition?
You're right. So indeed, Viral introduced us, and I understand that Viral is currently one of your top downloaded episodes. So he's rather keen that it stays that way.
Yep. You know what that means, Sri?
That means we're going to have to give love to Neil to beat Viral. That's what that means.
It is our mission. The gauntlet has been dropped. Viral, we're going to do everything we can to put Neil atop you in the list. Then we'll have two people from Nestle in our top.
Peter, when the CPG guys show some love, the audience will follow. So Neil, good luck, man. You're going to break some records here.
Hey, there's no competition here. We're all in the same company, and Viral is an outstanding leader. He keeps getting bigger and bigger challenges and smashing it out of the park. So I would definitely recommend anyone to listen to his episode if they haven't done already.
We're going to put a hyperlink to Viral's episode in the digital liner notes of this episode. But that being said, if you are a Nestle employee listening to this episode, go over to Apple Podcast and click that star rating. If you're listening on Spotify, do that. And make sure you take this episode and share it with all of your Nestle colleagues, because then they download it and it just creates a flywheel. We'll get Viral and bump up Viral's numbers a little more, and we'll get Neil into the top 10 as well. So let's do that. All right. You know, we're really looking forward to seeing Viral at Grocery Shop. He's going to be speaking in Las Vegas, so we're going to get together with him. Before we get to the questions that we've prepared for you, Neil, it would be really helpful if you would share with our audience just a high-level overview of Nestle and what your role is at the organization.
Sure. So look, over almost 3 years ago now, Nestle set quite a bold ambition, and this was to achieve 25% of our sales, reaching $25 billion by 2025. And when they did that, my role was created and also my team was created here in Barcelona. So concretely, we're the team that are on the hook to deliver that ambition, but clearly it takes a whole organization to drive that level of change. So what we do is we operate as a center of excellence. We're responsible for strategy, capability building, but also building the right culture and community in order to achieve our ambition.
Thank you, Neil. That's very helpful. In the digital liner notes of this episode, along with all the links we mentioned before, we're also going to include a link to your LinkedIn profile, Nestle's LinkedIn page and its corporate website. As I mentioned, our listeners tend to use mobile devices, so it makes it very easy for them to just toggle over and learn more about you. They love to multitask while they're listening to the melodious tones of our voices, educating and entertaining them today. All right, so let's get to the questions. We've prepared, I think, some good ones, and we know that you're a tremendous subject matter expert in the areas that Sri and I find most interesting, so let's get right to it, shall we? This is a very high-level one, but would love your thoughts around it. How are you thinking about the evolution of retail and the role that e-commerce is playing in it, given everything that's transpired over the last 3 years and looking into the future?
So look, I've been working in e-commerce for more than 10 years now. And today, honestly, it's such an exciting time to work in e-commerce because we're still in this enormous wave of digitalization. If you take a step back and think about retail overall, it started with the fragmented trade. And in the 80s, we saw hypermarkets come to the fore. In the noughties, we started to see channels come to play and the word omnichannel became commonplace and part of our lexicon. But for the last couple of years, we've seen this new latest wave of digitalization and the emergence of businesses like last mile delivery, social commerce, and business to business. At Nestle, we call this latest generation channelless. But watch out, because we all, in this channelless world, we still need to think about channels. And indeed, channelless doesn't mean that channels don't exist. It just means that technology are making the lines between channels invisible and certainly invisible to shoppers and consumers.
So Neil, needless to say, as you just said, exciting times to be in the business of e-commerce, digital, omni-channel, all those words come together. And first of all, welcome to the show. Now, you, of course, live in Barcelona, as you said a little while ago, and you have the ability, being in the center of the world, to see APAC, EMEA, America. Are those three shaped the exact same way? Are they different from an omni-channel perspective?
Honestly, this is where a job like mine is such a privilege, because you really get a chance to take a step back and see the different strengths of the different regions. So if we think about North America and Europe, which do have some similarities, I mean, for me, they are super interesting because it's really the transformation of the hypermarkets, what we now call bricks and clicks, in response to the growth of the pure players like Amazon, like Chewy. And the bricks and clicks businesses, they are unrecognizable from 10 years ago. I mean, I was looking on the Walmart website the other day, the same is true of Carrefour or Tesco. You can check out in 7, 8, 9, 10 different ways, from buy online, pick up in store, to a concierge service where they deliver it to your house and unload it into your fridge. Now, in Asia and also in Latin America, we're really seeing businesses like e-business to business, last mile delivery, really start trying to achieve some scale. And then finally, in China, you've got it all. You still have got fragmented trade, completely undigitalized. Then you've got the different generations of e-commerce where Alibaba and I don't know, JD are almost old fashioned e-commerce businesses. And then you've got the new business models like Pinduoduo or Meituan, where you see things like community group purchase. So it's only when you see all this together that really you understand that a global strategy can only go so far, and the work that the local markets do is essential to success.
Wow, I agree with you, Neil. What's most fascinating to me about the differences, I think about North America, right? North America is all predicated upon the big mover, the one that started it all, arguably, right? It's everybody's following Amazon. So everything that's done is to a degree in a model of Amazon. They are an enormous demand aggregator. And if you're a brand, you are doing yourself a disservice if you are not on that platform. Fundamentally different than Europe, right? I talk to a lot of brands that don't participate on the Amazon platform in Europe the way they do in the US. They don't feel the need to. To your point, markets are much more dominated by the omni-channels, the ones that are doing brick and click, and that's where they want to play. They can be much more selective and not necessarily have to play the discount game that Amazon dictates, that they just don't need to do that in Europe the way they do in the United States. So I think it's really interesting. And I think to your point on the delivery mechanisms, really just some fascinating approaches. And Sri and I always love to talk about what's going over in APAC because they're usually a couple of years ahead of us. But it's really fascinating how mobile commerce has really dominated the transition into digital commerce over there. Sri?
Yeah, but that's a question I actually want to ask Neil. That's our opinion, Peter, that Amazon is a must-do in the U.S., but love to hear from a global expert over here. When you compare the different markets, you've been clear about Europe, Latin, China, and that a local strategy should triumph for global. But what do you feel about the U.S.? Is it the Amazon show even today?
Well, firstly, if I may talk to you a little bit about Amazon in Europe. So indeed, Amazon has a power and a force in the US, which means you have to play. But certainly for at Nestle, our strategy is to be where shoppers are. And in Europe, they're absolutely, Amazon is an essential partner for us. Different brands have got different strategies, but our relationship with Amazon is super important. And beyond that, if you take a market like Japan, which I was lucky enough to visit earlier this year, you know, you see businesses like Amazon, which are uniquely positioned to win because it's actually quite a traditional market and Amazon is coming in and there's lots of space to be disrupted. What I'm really impressed with in the US when I talk to my colleagues is the mix of different models that you have in the US and how quickly your traditional retailers have been able to digitalize. So I already mentioned Walmart, but I mean, I'm a big fan of your podcast. I've heard you had, I don't know, the guys from Albertsons on talking about what they're doing with retail digital media. So when you look through the chain, we see different business models coming. And then Instacart, I mean, Instacart is massive, right? So even where businesses aren't digitizing, they're using partners like Instacart, partners like Ocado to be able to serve to meet this need that consumers have, which is convenience, speed, you know, good quality assortment and so on, which they can get on e-commerce.
So I guess this begs the question then, Neil, very different markets, very different evolution, very different demands. How do you as a global center of excellence really think about resourcing the organization to win regardless of what the market dynamics are kind of dictating?
Yeah, so this question never goes away. In its simplest form, kind of whose job is it to do that? And I think working in e-commerce, somehow I've been in perpetual organizational design mode for on and off for most of that time. What I've learned about it is that there's no silver bullet, only strategic choices. And there's a general trend, which is that there's a maturity curve. So in markets where you have low e-commerce penetration, generally speaking, e-commerce starts with a small team of experts. They're normally the crazy ones, the mavericks. And then over time, it gradually gets absorbed into different functions. But I think the most important thing, and we see this in our most advanced markets like the US, like China, like Korea, like the UK, is that nothing stands still. So whether it's the relationship within the customer teams or between the sales team and the marketing team, as these different business models keep evolving, you keep needing to refresh and reorganize your business. So, you know, one of the critical capabilities we're trying to build is rather than paying consultants to ask you to design the perfect organization business, the perfect organization for your business. It's really about building that muscle so that you can constantly update and fine tune and also review your ways of working on a regular cadence.
I like how you kind of went to over time, they get merged or they come into existing functions as they write cross-functional areas as they rightfully so. And I've been on that mission myself for about a decade now, and I'm finally starting to see traction there. So as you set up capabilities, as you advise markets, I mean, you've been clear it's a local strategy versus global strategy. The area that kind of piques Peter in my mind is the role of data, and especially data followed by the insights portion of it in building brands, creating winning consumer propositions, so this path to purchase journeys that include it. How do you go about this, and what's the role of data and insights in this, especially since your role is global?
Sure. So my very first job at PepsiCo, I mean, 15 years ago now, I was a category manager where I learned the phrase data, insights, action. And so data has been a perpetual part of my role. I think what has changed recently, especially specifically looking at it from an e-commerce angle, is the sources and the nature of the data. But also going back to my first role 15 years ago, we as manufacturers were experts on the category. We gave category expertise and we sought to be the category captains. Now I see that much more as a two-way thing. So I can think of numerous examples where we have worked with our retail partners, you know, to build NPD, because they've got specific insights that we don't have. Could be shopper behavior, could be first party data. So data and insights was, you know, a competitive advantage 15 years ago. Now it's much more fundamental, much more complex. We talk about analytics as well now. So it's something which was important and continues to be critical to success.
Let me remind our audience that Sri and I are speaking today with Neil Arora. He is the global head of e-commerce at the world's largest food and beverage manufacturer, Nestle. So, Neil, how do you see online search changing in the face of generative AI as it's integrated into the tools? We know about Ask Instacart and other capabilities. You know, are shoppers, are they going to continue to use retailers, or is actually this also possibly with the advent of personal assistants and infusing it there, do they become the mechanism where people go to find their products and make their purchase decisions? And it begets the question, really, what do brands need to focus on to win in this next generation of search that we see unfolding before us?
So we've been on for almost 20 minutes now. We've managed not to mention Gen AI. So that's pretty good, I would say. But if I come back to your question, I kind of see different changes over different horizons. So immediately in the short term, we can use Gen AI to generate content for text, for images and for videos. And this is really valuable because we need more and more content in these different channels and deeper content in these different places in this channelless world that I was talking about earlier. The second one is the technology that we use every day and the service providers. You know, how are they going to use AI, and how will the tools that we use every day get augmented by AI? Now, coming specifically to your question, this is kind of the biggest unknown, but my hypothesis is I cannot imagine in a time period as short as 2 or 3 years that this massive industry that we've created is going to be anything like the same as it is today. And the big question is these multi-billion dollar businesses that have created generational wealth, are they going to disrupt themselves and disrupt how they make money today? Or are they going to act like an incumbent and try and protect what they have? Already seeing some really exciting signs about what's happening, but for sure, the role of personal assistants, but more importantly, single answer solutions. I think this is where the whole search industry and how we shop actually starts to be rethought and reimagined. What do you guys think?
I'll tell you, my thought is search in the industry right now is all organized around a vertical capability to find items. You put in a search term, you find that item. It's kind of like you're walking around the perimeter of the store, you dart into the center, you grab the item you want, and then you go back out, and then you go to the next aisle. When we shop to solve problems, our problem is Sheree's going to throw a big Labor Day party in his backyard. He doesn't want to go vertically searching for everything, right? He just wants to say, find me items for my backyard barbecue. And that single answer with multiple items within it is a much more efficient way to do things than the way search. I think it is going to be very transformative. And the question becomes, if I train a personal assistant to know me, to know the dietary concerns, other things about me, and I ask it, throw me a party, then it's going to do all that I talked about, but it's also going to do it so it's more reflective of me as a consumer. And that's the kind of thing that's going to get me really excited, that will move more of what I do online than where I am right now. I don't know what you think, Sheree, but I would sure love to hear your thoughts too.
I think the most important applicability of AI will be search, like you both have said, but I think voice has a huge component to it. The example you gave of the backyard barbecue of finding an item, I think voice will have a much more prominent role in identifying what you want, being able to also generate and predict what you want, and then assisting consumers and just making the experience of finding, shopping, the whole omnichannel experience pretty frictionless to the extent feasible. And I think it's a combination of AI or voice-driven, anchored on AI at the end of the day. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing advances there. So speaking of search, speaking of AI, we are going to the favorite topic of the CPG guys. And Neil, you can guess what that is. It's retail media, of course. At last count, if I look globally, there's probably over 600 retail media platforms in North America alone. So globally, there's probably closer to 1,000 plus. How can CPG brands even comprehend realistically building a meaningful retail media strategy that can be executed at scale if there's so many networks? And then what market conditions need to change to make this objective more achievable? I mean, if there were 20 products, we're talking a different ability here versus the number of SKUs that proliferate in the market today. So can you take us to the world of retail media and where we are?
Sure. Well, look. This podcast has been a great source of inspiration because you were early on this, like banging the drum for the last 3 or 4 years. So I've listened to quite a few of your podcasts to bring myself up to speed with, you know, with the market, because it's moving so quickly. 600 retail media platforms, as you said. So we've got our framework and our strategy that's got all the elements, which I'm sure you can imagine, about having the right partnerships, the right metrics, the right measurement tool, the right ways of working. It's a little bit boring, but it's really important. Things like governance on spend and where you attribute different budgets. I've spoken to a few people in the industry. It was a big topic at Shop Talk as well. I really feel like that the industry would benefit from some standardization. At the moment, actually buying media, it's so fragmented. It's a big challenge for us to do. So the more we can standardize, talk the same language, start aligning on what success looks like, I think the better it is for us as an industry. I don't know. You guys are the real experts here. What do you think?
Neil, and that's kind of like a little bit of a follow-up for me over here. I mean, as you mentioned, we've been talking about this for 4 years now, or since the podcast started, three years and change, let's say 3.5 years or so. Why is it that in 3.5 years, nobody has stepped up or there hasn't been a conscientious effort to put standardization in place? Because the availability of inventory is just insane, which exactly what you said, without the standardization, buying media has become so fragmented. I'm not convinced media buyers even know these days what they're buying into. And then there's the pressure or test and learn across the board. I mean, what do you think?
Well, this is a funny one. So I'm British, but also I'm European. So I'm used to working across different borders and understanding how you make alliances between different interests. This is an example where people are crying out for standardization, but they want standardization to their model, right? That's kind of how it works. And really, it's not something where there is, you know, someone has the right to claim it. Amazon were the first, and they're miles out in front, not just in terms of spend it and so on. But actually now you see many other players, you know, starting to catch up, even though Amazon are continuing to accelerate their progress. So I don't know. I think that the more of us that are talking about this, that the more that these alliances will be created, and hopefully for the, you know, the betterment of the industry, because if we can get this right, basically we can serve better content to consumers. It's not a zero sum game where we're in competition. We can provide a better service.
I know Sri's going to have another question for you around standardization, but from my perspective, the challenge is like, it has to be reflective of the products that are being sold. Like, does an attribution window for measuring incrementality differ from a box of cereal versus, say, a 55-inch diagonal flat screen TV? I would argue yes. Very fundamentally different. So creating standardization, I think to your point, is it's a noble cause, but it has to be much more nuanced based upon what's going on. But I'll leave Sri to dig in, because I know there's been some recent efforts in this area. I want to talk a little bit about what you articulated as how you're structured within the organization. Like a lot of fast-moving consumer companies, e-commerce often operates as a center of excellence. And we've talked about this, but we'd like to hear it from you. You know, what do you think are some of the KPIs that should really matter to an organization around e-commerce? And at what point do you think COEs kind of need to get absorbed back into the business unit in a more formal manner? Because this gets to be just part of what a marketer does on a day-to-day basis.
So look, the first thing to say is at Nestlé, we've already absorbed back into traditional functions from a digital point of view. So myself and my team, we are part of the sales team. And another part of the value chain are in marketing, and another in supply chain or finance. So somehow we're absorbed back in the traditional functions, and we're kind of respecting those functions, and we come together cross-functionally to kind of make the magic happen. Now, regarding metrics, funnily enough, we've just done a lot of work on this. It's what we call the metrics that matter for e-commerce. And here we track all parts of our strategy, including leading and lagging measures. So when we absorb e-commerce back into functions in those markets which are less mature, we know which KPIs they need to take with them such that it all still comes together and works. And what we see is really it happens sort of stream by stream. So at what point is an e-commerce customer manager or a key account manager just a CAM? At what point is retail media just media? And when is your PIM simply part of your broader master data strategy and flow? So the answer is a little bit of science and a little bit of art, where the science is related to the maturity curve and the art is about the people. So who has the skill, the courage, the bandwidth to bite off these complex problems of the day?
I couldn't agree more with you. And although I've found over time the ability for a given market or a given function to absorb into has been much harder than I ever comprehended. And I've tried to enforce fit some of it, and it simply hasn't worked. Or I've had unhappy people with unhappy outcomes at the end of the day. And I think that's the primary reason to the day why digital COEs exist. And I start comparing it to the brick and mortar world, the true brick and mortar world, not the omni-channel brick and mortar world. Expertise in brick and mortar evolved over 3 to 5 decades of excellence. Digital will also take its time. And I'm sure if you go back 30 years in history, and I actually remember the 90s when category management was just starting to become a household name, and there was so much resistance to the word category management. People didn't want a category management team. And here we are now. Capman pretty much as an advisor dictates what's on the shelf, right? So I think we're a good decade away. I mean, it's not a popular opinion or rhetoric. We're a decade away from functions being truly able to absorb digital into its working ecosystems. But I want to go back to retail media for 1 second, Neil. And we talked about standardization and how standardization has become an ask from these various RMNs of, my model is the best model. But the IAB recently produced a retail media buyer's guide, very much to that comment about buying has become much harder in an unstructured environment. and that buyer's guide is actually supposed to help bring structure to industry offerings and measurement approaches. Peter and I see it as a first step. A first step was necessary to move something in some direction. But does it leave room for much more or something else? Or was that really a very good first step?
Yeah, I think so. It's a step in the right direction. But another thing that we're working on right now is really looking at our tech stack more generally for some time. This is really complex work in a business the scale of Nestlé. I think we're going the right direction. But in the immediate term, I see us onboarding much more tech solutions. I know your question was about retail. I'm just broadening it out to the role that technology plays generally. I think where it gets really interesting is about the democratization of data and the ability to connect different data sets that drive insight to action. This is neither particularly sophisticated or particularly new, but I really think at scale, it can be something transformational, especially when you're talking about transformation at an enterprise level. So coming back to retail digital media, connecting retail digital media ROI analysis with your broader media campaigns and being able to compare media, I think this is one of the advantages that you can see with standardization.
Yeah, for me, the fascination over all of this is, I think you kind of alluded to it, we've got great data sets out there. I think we're getting to the point where there's an enormous amount of data and we have to be very judicious in making decisions about what data sets. I've got to imagine, Neil, that this is something that probably, for lack of a better term, plagues large consumer packaged goods companies like Nestlé. When is data too much data? And are you paralyzed by your need to try and get every piece of data, or how do you make decisions going forward? I'd love your thoughts on that.
So again, coming to my early days at PepsiCo, I had a brilliant manager. And when I started, a gentleman called Mevin Fernando, it's a while since he's been in my, and he drummed into my head, data, insights, action, data, insights, action. So oftentimes, you know, we could be talking to our media partners, we could be talking to our, even our customers about getting more data, cutting and splicing and the dicing data in different ways. What I really sort of try and remember from what I learned in my early days is, extract insights from the data that you have and take action. And if you don't have all the information that you need, use that bit of intuition, move things, play with it, and then complete the loop again, measure and then revise it. So I can never remember a time in my years in CPG where we've had less data than we had yesterday, but we're not still asking for more data. The bit that, you know, gets me excited is driving the actions, seeing the results, and then completing the loop all over again.
Well said, Neil. So you made reference, we talked a little bit earlier about the technology of generative AI and the influence it'll probably have on search. Looking out over the next 3 to 5 years, what other kind of transformational capabilities, technologies excite you most about e-commerce in fast-moving consumer goods? Would love to just hear kind of like, what's piquing your curiosity as you think about where you want to take? Because it's always the, and I always make reference to this, it's about Wayne Gretzky. He was never about where the puck was. He was about where the puck was going. So where's the puck going, Neil?
So it's a great question. And this is the kind of thing that keeps me up at night, because ultimately that's the privilege of jobs like mine, like ours. It's super obvious to say, but technology and data are going to play a bigger role. And by the way, not just in e-commerce. I mean, this is the overall direction for CPG. Every single part of the business. I talk to my colleagues in finance, but in HR, you know, and the people metrics that they're able to get now, it's quite incredible. So I think that the value comes from connecting these disparate data sources where, you know, 1 and 1 equals 4 or equals 5. So I was talking about retail digital media before, but, you know, and by the way, I know there's tools that do this already, but connecting your online availability measures with your offline and using it to power your field sales, using content changes and digital shelf measures to understand the impact on outward sales and market share. This is pretty easy stuff to say, And there's many people that claim they can do it, but I'm not sure there's anyone in the industry that says we're doing this at an enterprise level on a habitual basis. This is how we run our business. So they're the kind of fundamentals that myself and my team, we're going to be focused on in the years to come. And I managed to answer without saying Gen AI.
That's good. But if we're playing podcast bingo, and I'm sorry you don't get to win because you didn't bring it up. So, but seriously, Neil, that was really terrific. I'm going to turn to my audience and just say that please visit cpgguys.com. You can find all of our content. You can filter our episodes based on topics like retail media, data insights, loyalty, DEI, ESG, all of those. Makes it really easy for you to find episodes that kind of sing to the song that you like. And of course, if you think that you or your company has some thought leadership to contribute to this community discussion that we foster through the podcast, just drop us an email at contact@cpgguys.com. Maybe you can join us for a future episode. And of course, when you're at cpgguys.com, on the navigation bar at the top, there's a little link to ratings and reviews. Please leave us some there. Go to Apple or Spotify. We really do want your feedback. We really appreciate it. Sri and I are always heartened whenever we run into people, be it at an airport, be it at a retailer's office, inside a brand manufacturer's office, or wherever, conferences in particular. I know it's going to be great for us to go to grocery shop because it's like homecoming to us. We get to see so many of our industry friends. And of course, if we don't meet you in person, we still want to thank the 25,000 plus LinkedIn followers that we have that trust us to both educate and entertain them about this transformational industry we're in. Neil, really great to follow up on the conversation you and I had in Barcelona and to have you on to talk with Sri and me about everything that's going on in e-commerce and fast-moving consumer goods. Really great to have you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the show. I had loads of fun.
Excellent. Sri, wow. I think this isn't going to be hard for us to help Neil surpass Viral in terms of downloads because it was some great content. Would love to turn to you and find out what are some of the things that really piqued your interest in what Neil shared with us today?
Yeah, look, we started up top by kind of agreeing that it's an exciting time to work in e-commerce, digital, omnichannel. The last 3 years have been nothing short of phenomenal. We jumped into business models where the UX is very much over the last few years, a mix of business models where there's no one outstanding player anymore because some of the legacy brick and mortar retailers have played catch up in the last few years. Then you look at Europe, bricks and clicks, unrecognizable from 10 years ago. Latin America, really last mile delivery. And China is basically some of everything, or better said, all of it. And the one that really rose up top to me is the new one, which is just the fifth or sixth time I'm hearing of a community group purchase, which actually in the US would be a fantastic model to bring to bear, given we live in communities in the US, pretty much any suburban environment. And the importance that strategies for brands need to stay local versus global. Then we jumped into the relationship with Amazon and its importance. What I'd say in certain markets, much more prevalent, certain markets, certain less. I think Amazon has left its footprint pretty much everywhere in the world. Maybe China is the only exception to that rule. Korea, a couple countries here and there, but it's really there everywhere. Then we got into business models and how to make COEs work and the role of a COE. And I think Neil rightfully pointed out a COE is only as successful as it being able to put skill sets back into cross-functional membership or back into functions where they belong, because it's a balance of art and science. And the sooner that art and science is developed, the better off we are. Jumped into the role of AI. We asked the question, is search and AI coming together? I shared my own opinion on that one, but sounds like search and AI are indeed made for each other. And then standardization of retail media networks, given the proliferation we have in the industry, causing media buying to be significantly fragmented. But the problem is most media networks, RMNs, want their model to be the model or best in class model. And then IAB, of course, are trying to rope it all in, step in the right direction, long way to go, but it's better than nothing. And then we did talk a little bit about tech and its importance and what tech will change in this space as we fast forward. But Neil ended it by grounding us all back in the fundamentals that came from his manager. Get the data to insights to action right, and you're never going to have an issue with whatever you touch in the CPG industry.
Thank you, Sri. I agree. My only problem is the whole community purchase capability. Problem is that my neighbor and best friend lives in LA and I live in Connecticut. I don't quite know how we're going to pull that off, but it is a worthwhile thought about it. Thank you, Sri, for that summary. And
our community is nationwide, Peter.
That is true. That is true. But thank you, Sri, for that summary. And as always, thank you for joining me in this little cottage industry that we've created here, this venture that we call the CPG Guys Podcast. To our audience, thank you. As always, we look forward to speaking with you on the next episode of the, wait for it, CPG Guys Podcast. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye. The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.